So, as I said, anytime there's a technological change, which you can't stop, the industry has to adjust. And the industry back in the old days didn't adjust initially because they wanted to control distribution channels, physical distribution they had, but they couldn't control digital distribution overall. And we're in a marketplace today where maybe 25% of the music sold is a physical product, and that's going to continue to diminish overall. And what's also happened is that downloads have diminished significantly, such that I predict that downloads aren't even going to be around in a few years.
Each Day Podcast Radio Show with Bruce Hilliard. Today and every day, reaching out for innovative ideas in every way. Today's show is brought to you by Your Future. It comes with a lifetime guarantee.
Ooh, make a better day now, baby. Ooh, better than ever before. Ooh, make a better day.
Trevor McShane, welcome to the show. And you are located in California, correct?
I sure am. Southern California.
How's the weather down there?
Phenomenal, as always.
it always is, isn't it? I'm up in the Seattle area, and yeah, we're a little bit... this time of year is good, but, you know, most of the time it's kind of rainy and overcast. But so you are an attorney, along with being a musician, but you...
I am.
You specialize in music law, correct?
Well, music and entertainment generally. I've got 9 lawyers here at my firm, and we do all areas of entertainment. I started off purely as a music transactional attorney many years ago.
How did you get involved in music? You were doing that prior to law, right?
No. I loved music, rock and roll, in college at Berkeley. I was the music critic, and I always knew I was going to be a lawyer. And then, started playing guitar when I was about 20. I never played out publicly, really, for 20 plus years. I just played in my room and practiced, and eventually, I was taken into the studio. And my first session was 2 members of the Parliament Funkadelic, who were the greatest black band in history. And I said, this is fun. And I started it. I put a group together and I recorded my first album, and I've been doing it ever since. That was about 1993.
So what were your influences? What kind of stuff were you listening to?
I would say that my number one influence is Buddy Holly.
Oh, wow.
And it's it was an honor for me. I ended up representing his estate as a lawyer. And Holly, you know, died at the age of 22 in 1959, but created a body of work that is masterful. He was a very clever lyricist and melody maker and an innovator. And so I loved him, loved Beatles, loved the Neil Young Harvest period of the time, liked the Stones, very much loved the Beach Boys, and any of the, you know, the music from the 50s and 60s and much of the 70s, I'm a huge fan of.
You're the first attorney I've ever had on the show, so this is very interesting to hear something from your standpoint. Who have you worked with that, you know, you named off Buddy Holly? That's, wow, that's, yeah.
Oh, I've had many, many, many clients. I did Christopher Cross's record deal. I reunited the Everly Brothers. I reunited Holland Dozier Holland, the great songwriting team. I did the first deal for Jane's Addiction. I represent Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. I represent the estate of Rick Nelson. I do Lloyd Price.
Wow.
And, you know, jazz people over the years, Toshio Toshiko Akiyoshi, for example, who's a legend. And then, you know, just other acts that maybe aren't so famous, but I have done their work, and managers of acts, things like that.
Does Mitch Ryder still play?
Absolutely. And he's on tour frequently, and he's great.
Yeah, I would like
and
to
he's
see.
And he's a nice guy.
That's good to hear. Yeah, I think.
He was kind enough to do two duets with me.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, that was a thrill.
I'll bet. So you're involved in some.
I've done work for Jack Tempchin, who wrote Peaceful Easy Feeling and Slow Dancing, and he was kind enough to write a couple tunes with me as well.
Okay, yeah, I see some co-writers on your song list. But you are involved in the writing. Tell me a little bit about the Na Na song. I think that's a great party song.
That's Dave Yaden. I wrote that with, and Candace, his then partner, singer. And that's just, I had met him through, funnily enough, you know, through somebody at the gym. And we got together. He's just a great artist, pianist, and so they came over, and we just wrote that song one afternoon, and it's basically a high-powered, charging tune about a guy saying, "I'm done with you. I'm not going to take it anymore."
It's such a happy song, though. You don't catch that.
It is.
Yeah.
The guy's got his freedom. Na 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 na. Your number's out, my phone, don't knock, was I at home? Na 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 na. Scratch you off my list, guess you just got this. Na 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 na.
Okay, that makes sense. It's a great song, great song. California, that's fitting.
California was written by John Barnard and Marilee Weber. The backstory there is that Marilee Weber had come to me back in the old days, many years ago, when I was shopping deals for people, and we never came to an agreement for me to shop her, but I thought she was very talented, and as a fan, I would go see her play. And over the years, we developed a friendship. After my first album came out, which went nowhere because I was way too busy being a lawyer and putting out other things. I put out a book that was the authorized biography of John Wooden, the greatest coach in the history of sports.
Yeah, I saw that. That
philosophy.
Sounds super interesting. I'm going to check that out.
So John and Marilee came to me and said, you know, we really think you're very talented, and we have a studio, and we want to produce you. And I said, really? Okay, let's do it. So I've been working with them ever since, and frequently write with John, but also with Marilee and John. And California came about, I think the initial spark was Marilee had the idea, but it's a very ethereal tune. I think almost reminiscent of a sort of a Joni Mitchell in the Court and Spark days. Mm-hmm. And it's an ode to the great state that we live in.
Place that's free. You can be who you want to is found every day now. It's the reason to be here.
Power. There's another great song.
Okay, Power is written by myself and a man named Peter Burke. Peter Burke has been working in the music business his whole life, and his dad was a famous arranger and songwriter, did much work with Frank Sinatra.
Hmm.
Anyway, Peter has been a friend, a client, and among other things, he discovered Quarter Flash.
Okay, that's a Portland band, correct?
That's right. And Peter came to me with this lyric, Power, which is, I think it's iconoclastic and anti-establishment, and me having been a graduate of Berkeley and having gone there, yes, UC Berkeley, during the revolution.
So you're so kind of a badass guy.
And sympathetic to what the lyrics were, I put music to it, and I changed the lyrics around somewhat.
Yeah.
But it's an anti-establishment tune, and it's raising a fist, and you can't trust power in this society, whether it be political or even the courts. Much of the time, we live in a nation of conflict, of competing interests and ideas and ideals. And this is a song that highlights those differences, but basically, I think, has an optimistic tone to it.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Another song that I like, and it's an instrumental, and I believe you wrote it, New Mexico Sunrise.
That's right.
Yeah.
I own a book publishing company with my wife, Cindy, called Cool Titles, and we publish six or so novels set in Albuquerque or New Mexico with a sort of a down-and-out lawyer. One of the books, the writer asked me to write lyrics that he could fit into the book and music. And so if you buy the book, you can have music to go along with it as well. Well, I did, I think, two, maybe three instrumentals on that. And this is one of them that I've repurposed and put on my Boom Boom album now. And it's just, look, man, who doesn't like a good instrumental, and that's what this is. It's just a toe-tapping thing that'll bring, hopefully, a smile to your face.
Yeah, and it does. I think, back to Pet Sounds, that has some instrumentals on it, and they're really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't, you're right, you don't get it a lot. There are a few bands through the years, like The Ventures, that did nothing but instrumentals, but it's refreshing.
I'm a great fan of the great instrumentals. Floyd Kramer, I commend to all of you out there. Last Date is an incredible song by Floyd Kramer. Or Love is Blue by Paul Moria.
I love that
tune as well.
Yeah, wow.
And On the Rebound by Floyd Kramer. He was a pianist, just terrific stuff. And then, of course, The Ventures with Walk, Don't Run. You know, you asked me about my influences, too. You know, I was the attorney for the Academy of Country Music, so I saw all the great country acts, and I was introduced to George Strait.
Wow.
And I saw a show one time where, an award show, where Garth Brooks and all these other people said, I just want to give a tip of my hat to George Strait. And I said, I better listen to him. So I bought an album called 50 Number One Hits. And I said, yep, George Strait is the guy.
I interviewed an English rock band that were very young, too, and the lead singer did most of the talking in the interview, and I asked him what his influences were, and the first one he said was George Strait. Mm. And it blew me away, because the music they play is not even country, let alone George Strait's pretty classic, straightforward country, you know. Yeah, very influential.
Yeah, country is big. Country is good. I mean, Hank Williams is the godfather, I suppose, of country music, and you read his lyrics, and they are just delightful, you know, really clever, good stuff.
Yeah, how did he do that, you know, in a very short period of time, too?
That's right. He died at the age of 29.
Takes us back to Buddy Holly. He was 22 when he passed?
He was.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, they have an annual show in February, the first week of February, in Clear Lake, Iowa, called the Winter Dance Party, which was the name of the show that Holly played at. And they've been doing that for, I don't know, 20, 30 years, and they bring in acts from the 50s or so. And I went there a couple years ago, and saw the Remaining Crickets played, and the Nelson Twins, Gunnar and Matthew, played, doing a whole tribute to their father, which was fabulous.
Were they pretty good?
A number of other acts. What's that?
Were they pretty good?
They're terrific, really good. And they were kind enough to invite me up on the stage, and I did a tune, I did Well All Right by Buddy Holly for the 3,000 people assembled who were wearing poodle dresses and bomber jackets, and it's a real kick, and it's been quite a successful event. I asked the guy who runs the event, why do you do this? And he says, well, and it's like 10 degrees, okay? And he says, well, Neville, during these winter periods, we don't get a lot of visitors. So it's their way of bringing people to their town.
And it should, and I want to go, you know? Sounds really cool.
It's really fun.
Well,
yeah.
I hear a siren in the background, so they're probably going to want you.
Well, I'm at my law office in Beverly Hills, so they're going to save somebody.
So I'm dying to know, what's it like? You handle other cases in Beverly Hills. Are they unique to other places in the country?
Well, my practice is pretty much limited to entertainment types of cases. I'll do copyright infringement cases in music. I frequently have sued the record labels for various issues. Where's the money?
Yeah,
is happening quite often, all the time. I've done class actions against the record companies saying you're not paying properly on downloads, for example. And there are others coming up. Watch this space.
Has that been a crazy adjustment in your profession when the internet came out, for instance?
Anytime a new technology comes out, it's a disruption to the way of doing business, and the internet has absolutely changed the industry overall. What happened historically was that when Napster came in and the others, and LimeWire and all that, Kazaa, they wiped out the industry with piracy in much of the ways, and tens of thousands of people were fired at companies around the world. It's taken a long, and the gross revenues of the music companies diminished greatly, by a third to half. Well, wow. It's all changing now. It's all coming back because of streaming. Overall, you pay $5-$10 a month to Spotify or Apple, and you have access to every tune in the world. So there's a lot of complaining that the royalties are too paltry, but they just increased for songwriters, and you can make money overall. So, and it disrupted the industry in that acts that traditionally were living off of music publishing and sound recording royalties had to really focus on and concentrate on live performances and merchandising to make up the difference. So, as I said, anytime there's a technological change, which you can't stop, the industry has to adjust. And the industry back in the old days didn't adjust initially because they wanted to control distribution channels, physical distribution they had, but they couldn't control digital distribution overall. And we're in a marketplace today where maybe 25% of the music sold is a physical product, and that's going to continue to diminish overall. And what's also happened is that downloads have diminished significantly, such that I predict that downloads aren't even going to be around in a few years.
So everything's just streaming.
Everything's going streaming. Who needs a record collection anymore? It's the celestial jukeboxes, they say. And the beauty is that anybody can now get product out. There's no impediment to distribution anymore.
Yes. Yeah, so
getting noticed, that's another issue.
Because it's a huge ocean out there. But yeah, it is true. There's a trade-off in that the little guy has a shot with the indie label, I think. You know,
yeah.
You know way more about this than I do. So, yeah. So interesting.
I should plug. There's a video I just did of Eloise song got 270,000 views on Facebook as we speak today, and it's been growing at quite a rapid rate.
Boyfriend left her in the parking lot. Opportunity awaits, so I stopped. I could help, I thought.
She just wants to be loved. She just wants to be loved, love. She just wants to be loved by me.
I have watched her. I always saw her with that jerk and his Chevelle. He ditched her. It's time for me to get to work.
She just wants to be loved. She just wants to be loved, love. She just wants to be loved by me.
Could talk all day. You opened a can of worms there at the end. It's so interesting. Thank you so much, and I'm going to bid you a fond adieu, and maybe we'll talk again sometime. I might need your services.
Well, I'd be happy to help you in any way, and thank you very much for having me on.
Okay. Thanks, Trevor.
All right.
Bye-bye. We have a few minutes left, so I'm going to play you a song I wrote and recorded about 8 months ago. It's called Sam. It's about a girl that stares at her phone and is completely oblivious to the guy. Dear Sam, you don't even know who I am.
Dear Sam, you don't even know who I am. Dear Sam, I'm writing as good as I can. I guess I'm writing a letter to you. Dear Sam, I saw you on the telephone. You know you look real pretty in your social media, Facebook puppery. Dear Sam, not a stereotypical girl. White lace, a selfie with a crazy face. Imagine a girl named Sam. Dear Sam, I saw you on the telephone. You know you look real pretty in your social media, Facebook profile. Hello, I read it in your diary. Oh no, you left it for the world to see. You show it so obviously. Dear Sam, I saw you on the telephone. Tried to write you a letter to make you feel better, but I don't know what to do. Dear Sam, Sam, I saw you on the telephone. You know you look real pretty in your social media, Facebook profile. Dear Sam, I ran out of words to say. It's okay, it doesn't matter anyway. This romantic I am. Dear Sam, I saw you on the telephone. You know you look real pretty in your social media, Facebook puppery. Dear Sam,
listening to the Better Each Day podcast radio show with Bruce Hilliard. We'll be back with a new horizon, but until then, honor the future. It comes with a lifetime guarantee.
And we're all just trying to make the next day a bit better.